You're listening to the Fairness Doctrine, Cyber Station USA Radio Network. If you'd like to take part in our conversation this afternoon, there's a couple ways you can do that. 617-328-3526. Or you can send us an email any time of the day or night, as many of you already have. And that's at fairnessdoctrineradio@gmail.com. Now back to our host with the most, Chuck Moores and Dr. Patrick O'Heffernan. Gentlemen, take it away.
Thank you, Roz. And our guest this segment is Brad Friedman. He's an L.A.-based investigative journalist, blogger, publisher of his own blog site, The Brad Blog. Brad, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, my pleasure. Anything called The Fairness Doctrine, and I'm in.
Well, there we go. Brad, look, you've been following the Occupy Wall Street movement from the beginning, I think particularly in Los Angeles, where you're based. Do you have a sense of, at this point, of any coherent principles or philosophical ideas that they represent for their own followers and for the rest of us?
Well, sure. Isn't it pretty obvious? It's all about the disparity in income between the 1% and the 99%. And the corporate corruption that has gone on so long, the corporations, the corporate takeover, if you will, of our government, of our election system. Oh, that seems pretty clear to me. Doesn't it seem clear to you?
Well, I'd ask you particularly about the election system in a minute, but as far as the 99%, Patrick and I the other day, just to clarify sort of the political orientation of the Occupy Wall Street movement, we talked about the Forbes magazine publishes once a year the top 100 wealthiest Americans, and at least half of them, if not most of them, are liberals, at least in terms of their association with the Democratic Party and their support of liberal causes. So would you consider the Occupy Wall Street movement to be liberal?
No. I don't think they necessarily fit into any of the – in fact, I think that's what they're railing against, frankly, is this phony right-left, red-blue, Republican, Democratic, liberal, conservative paradigm that has just crippled this country over the past – certainly over the past 10 years, but more likely over the last 30 years. And I think that's precisely what they are railing against. I've seen a lot of demonstrations against Barack Obama, against the Democrats. To put it into this neat right-left, red-blue, liberal-conservative box, I think, does a disservice both to the demonstrators and, frankly, to this nation, and underscores exactly why these folks are out there trying to make the points that they are, and that they are making quite successfully, it seems.
You know, Brad, I think that the Occupy Wall Street movement and the Tea Party movement have some overlap, at least in one area that I can detect, and that is that one of the basis of the Tea Party movement was that they were opposed to these enormous bailouts by the federal taxpayers, by us, the taxpayers, of these major corporations, particularly Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but all of the other ones that are associated with them, and the fact that their CEOs were able to get these enormous benefit packages as they were leaving, going out the door, and what that did to the economy. But my sense where there's a difference is that the Occupy Wall Street movement, and of course I'm generalizing, you have to in order to discuss these things, they're not just opposed to that. They're also generally opposed to the entire structure of private ownership, of corporations, of success. And I think that that's where there's a line drawn.
Where do you get that idea?
From this whole idea that your very opening comments, the 99% versus the 1%, without differentiating which part of that 1% that you were taking objection to. In other words, there's the top successful people and corporations in this country are somehow inherently corrupt, that the system of private ownership, the system of success is inherently corrupt, and that because people are successful and are to be viewed in the context of corruption, they are supposed to give over something to people who haven't been as successful.
I think that's a make-believe straw man argument. Let me hit a couple of points that you brought up there. One, yeah, I do think they have something in common with the Tea Party, but not the fake Tea Party, not the one that started in January of 2009, rather the original Tea Party, which started back in 2007 with the Ron Paul Libertarians. I think that they have quite a bit in common. And the pushback was not against, you know, Fannie and Freddie. It was against these huge corporate bailouts to places like AIG and Citibank and Bank of America, and the fact that we were, socializing, privatizing the profits, mm-hmm. and socializing the losses. Once the Tea Party was co-opted by the Republican Party in the wake of Barack Obama's victory, things changed greatly for the Tea Party. And it was no longer, they weren't out there screaming about Fannie and Freddie ever, to be frank. They were out there screaming about AIG and the bonuses that they were, giving to their employees after the government had bailed them out. Now, this notion that seems to me, if you can support it, that's great. But I haven't seen any evidence that the folks out there are against success, I think, as you put it. And pardon me if I'm not mm-hmm. Paraphrasing correctly. But I have seen absolutely no evidence of that. They seem to be saying, hey, we all need to pay our fair share. It was not cops and firefighters and school teachers that blew up this economy, that broke this nation. It was policies that let the 1% let their income absolutely skyrocket for the first time in the history of this nation, or at least since the Gilded Age, versus folks in the middle class whose income has fallen off or has stayed level for the past 30 years. I haven't seen any of them saying, give us free money, you owe us this or that. They're saying, let's have a fair share. Let's have everybody put in their, pay their fair share. This notion that you see these Republicans and the Koch brothers and everybody else railing against the notion that they should have their taxes increased, something like 3%, even while they're talking about cutting trillions in social services against those folks who had nothing to do with the economy collapsing as it did, is just outrageous. They're outraged by it, as they should be, as should everybody, frankly. And so to make up this notion that they're against, success or corporate success, or that corporations are inherently corrupt, frankly, and with all due respect, is a phony argument.
Well, I agree it's a phony argument. Our guest is Brad Friedman.
It's an argument that is not being made. That's what I mean.
The author, I disagree. The author of the Brad blog. And Brad, look, I think that, again, the 1% that the Tea Partiers are opposed to are those who have gotten public, were basically government agencies that were posing as private sector companies like Fannie and Freddie. And the chronology of that is that the AIG bailout and the bank bailouts happened after the Fannie and Freddie bailout, which was in October of 2008.
The AIG
bailout was as a result of there being the insurance company for Fannie and Freddie, and the banks were largely the recipients of the bundled investment instruments that were passed to them by Fannie and Freddie. But they're all guilty of it. The problem is that in the free market context, they should have been allowed to fail on their own, as opposed to getting the public sector having to step forward and bail them out. And I think that the differentiation is that the companies that are earning their success on the private market, like Microsoft or Apple or any of the others, those successes are beneficial to everybody. It's the companies that actually went and became almost quasi-government agencies. There was a small group of people in Congress at the time. Most of them were very conservative, but there were a couple on the left as well, who were saying, don't do this, don't bail them out. And the conservative approach would have been to perhaps have a moratorium on taxes so that more capital could remain in the private sector and stimulate the economy rather than go into this enormous debt, which is another aspect and concern of the Tea Party movement. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask, you've mentioned the Fannie and Freddie about three or four times. Why haven't you mentioned Bank of America? Why haven't you mentioned Citibank? Why haven't you mentioned
I would mention any of them. Actually, I said any of the companies that got bailouts by taxpayer money. I mean, and I think that, first of all, the Fannie and Freddie bailout, I think, was the linchpin of it. But they all, any of them, Countrywide, you know, those are the issues, not the fact that you have a private sector company like Microsoft, which is of the top 1%, that's earning money and not taking money away from the taxpayers. That's where I would contend there's a difference between the Tea Party approach and the Occupy Wall Street approach. And, again, I don't know a lot about it. I've gone down there in Boston. I've spent some time there. I have done more than a little bit of reading on it. And the approach has, I would contend, has been a general assault on the very successful, without differentiating between those who have gained by public benefits and those who have made their money the old-fashioned way, which is by creating the wealth themselves.
Or like Citibank and AIG and Bank of America,
who didn't
make their money the old-fashioned way.
That's right.
Right.
And we agree on that, Brad. We agree that those who got public funds, and I'll say it a fourth time, are those who were opposed by the Tea Party because they received government money. They were not private companies. They actually were doing public social engineering, and when they failed. They were bailed out. That's what started the Tea Party movement. That's what they were upset
about. Well, the Tea Party movement
actually
started in
2000. Not the fact that other people who are not bailed out are successful in their own right.
The Tea Party movement started in 2007 under Ron Paul, railing against the Bush administration's foreign policies and occupation of Iraq.
And so forth.
I haven't heard the Tea Party lately calling for breaking up the too-big-to-fail banks. I haven't heard the Tea Party ever.
No, I don't think they are. I think you're right about that. But what is
I haven't heard the Tea Party
suggest?
Movement.
I mean,
Chuck, if I could just respond. If I could just respond, because you had a long statement there. I haven't heard the Tea Party ever rail against the government socialism given to the big oil companies and the huge subsidies that they give there.
I know nothing about that. I mean,
you know nothing about the billions of dollars that are given every year to the big oil companies?
I've never heard of it. How did the government give billions of dollars to
the
oil
companies? You need to look that up.
Can you give me an example? Give me an example since you made the statement.
Sure, I'm happy to.
The government
gives about $4 billion in subsidies each year to the big five oil companies.
Do they give them a check for $4 billion? I mean, is the government, are we handing over $4 billion? In what form?
Yes. Yes, we are.
How?
I'm
not trying to sound ignorant here, but generally, since you've made the charge, who gets this money? How do they write the check? Where are they giving them the money, and who and why?
Well, the big five oil companies get money, get tax breaks, get kickbacks from resources that they need to from licensing fees and so forth, from royalties and so forth, to the tune of about $3 or $4 billion. That's an automatic subsidy that they get every year. The fact that you hadn't heard about it, that Obama and the Democrats had been calling for getting rid of those subsidies. It was actually at the heart of one of the recent hostage crises when the Republicans were holding the legislation hostage concerning lowering the deficit or something like that recently. And the fact that you haven't heard about that is rather stunning. On the other side of the coin, you've got the government – who is trying to kickstart the economy with green technology and so forth. The resources, the subsidies that are given to renewable energy technology must be renewed every year. But the subsidies given to the oil companies is automatic, $3-4 billion each and every year, despite the fact that they are making all-time record profits
I think I hear the break music, gentlemen.
Yeah, we'll go to break, but I think you're talking about tax cuts, not subsidies. But why don't we go to a break? We'll be right back.
our Blog Talk listeners, and I think it's just great for our radio stations and our networks to do a little business, earn a little money. And don't forget, you can contact us either by telephone, 167-328-3526, or email. I got a couple of emails here already. Email us at faredoc@gmail.com. faredoc@gmail.com. And I thank you for the emails we have now, and we'll read the questions to our guests.
I believe we can send humans to Mars and return them safely to Earth.
We need to challenge the humans on you.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
A worldwide broadcasting system.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder. On this week's edition of the Stuff File program, Oscar-winning actor George Takiris talks about his role in the classic film West Side Story. World-class figure skater Lucinda Roux and her autobiography, Frozen Teardrop, the tragedy and triumph of figure skating's Queen of Spin. And Stephen Kleinedler, the supervising editor of American Heritage Dictionary. There's all that plus Stuff File news and more on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. Eastern, right here on CyberStationUSA.com.
An executive order doesn't have the force of law, ladies and gentlemen. It is simply a paper tiger.
Mike Spiegel, 3 p.m. weekdays on CyberStationUSA.com.
866-738-1400. Anybody wants to call, feel free to do it. Make this a town forum, if you will.
And in a democracy, you can only ignore the will of the people for so long and get away with it.
We're glad to get your calls on this program at 866-738-1400, toll free. We will see what happens.
A new show comes to CyberStation featuring the freshest in alternative rock, overlooked classics, local show listings, and social raving. It's the Eclectic Taste, every Tuesday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time here on CyberStation USA.
Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to save a life. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911. Then push hard and fast in the center of the chest until help arrives. This easy and effective technique is called hands-only CPR.
Hands-only.
It does not involve mouth-to-mouth breathing and simply requires two hands. You can use it to help save a life.
Help save a life.
For more information, visit handsonlycpr.org. Does not involve mouth-to-mouth breathing.
CPR. Help save a life.
A public service announcement brought to you by the American Heart Association, the Ad Council, and CyberStationUSA.com.
CyberStationUSA.com.
Terrestrial radio is basically going to be supplanted by what's happening in technology. Think about this. Your internet receiver gives you the entire world. It's remarkable.
This is CyberStation USA.
You're listening to the Fairness Doctrine, CyberStation USA Radio Network. If you'd like to take part in our conversation this afternoon, there's a couple ways you can do it. One is 617-328-3526. You can also send us an email any time of the day or night, and that's at fairnessdoctrineradio@gmail.com. Now back to our host with the most, Chuck Morris, Dr. Patrick O'Heffernan. Gentlemen, take it away.
Okay, I want to introduce my co-host, Dr. Patrick O'Heffernan, but before I do, I just want to clarify that our guest, Brad Friedman from the Brad Blog, I think, Brad, what you're talking about when you're talking about taxpayer subsidies to energy companies, and by the way, I include that in that oil, gas, alternative energy, solar, wind, all of it, is legitimate tax breaks, legitimate tax cuts and tax deductions for expenses so that they can do well in this country and hire people. I don't think there are too many examples where the government writes them checks. Maybe only in one small area, and that is for research and development. But let me welcome aboard my co-host.
Well, that's right, to the tune, of about $3 or $4 billion, and that's only to the fossil.
Okay, Patrick.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks.
If I could just respond to that, that's only to the $3 or $4 billion. That's only to the fossil fuel companies each year. The renewable energy, they get a tiny fraction, and they have to fight for it each and every year to be renewed.
Okay.
Patrick, you're an expert on energy. Does the government give the oil companies checks for $3 to $4 billion a year? And
well,
if so, why?
Before I answer that, Chuck, I've got some of my own comments here I'd like to make first, if you don't mind.
Sure. Not at all.
This weekend, I did two things that I didn't realize were linked until much later. I took a hike with my dog up in the hills overlooking Brentwood, and the trail I take goes by a number of mansions, one of which is owned by Paris Hilton, the others of which are owned by a number of New York investment bank executives who commute by helicopter and private jet, and actually saw one of the helicopters land to their offices in New York. And I thought to myself, yeah, that's where the 1% lives. That night, I saw a rather remarkable film. It's called Margin Call. And it's an inside look at what went on inside of, and you take your pick, Lehman Brothers, Goldman Sachs, or AIG, of how the decision was made to bundle mortgages into derivatives and sell the derivatives to people they actually to sell derivatives they knew were going to fail, and how the banks planned on making money from actually destroying the rest of the world economy, and how they discussed it. And I thought to myself, those $20 to $35 million homes that I hike past belong to the people that are being portrayed in this movie. And that's why they do it. And, you know, obviously this was a movie. I don't know if it was, you know, true or not, but it was based on hearings before Congress, and also in since a private litigation that showed that many of those executives knew exactly what they were doing.
Oh, they
did. I don't know if you've seen the movie, Brad, but do you have any thoughts on this, that this was really done on purpose, that people knew what they were doing?
Oh, there's no question that they were that they knew what they were doing. There was no question, and that's why when you know folks throw in Fannie and Freddie like that, Fannie and Freddie was not out there, you know, selling these derivatives, telling their clients that these were surefire and you're going to make money on these. Go ahead and buy them up, and at the same time buying them short themselves. These guys were playing, these private banks were playing both sides of the street. It was a criminal operation, to be frank. And the fact that that nobody has gone to jail for any of this, and for Chuck's sake, I'll throw in even you know, Fannie and Freddie, if anybody there broke the law, great, throw them in jail. The fact that nobody has gone to jail, that is the sort of thing that people are up in arms about. The fact that you know, we pretend that fossil fuel companies need these billions of dollars in government funds when they are making all-time record profits in the history of mankind, even at the same moment we're saying, well, we can afford to give the oil companies more money, but we've got to lay off cops and firefighters and school teachers and government workers right now that we need but that we can't afford, but we can continue to afford to give money to these folks who are making enormous profits. That's what this is about, and that I haven't seen that film, but if it spoke to that, if it spoke to the folks who were gaming the system, you know, that is exactly why folks are so outraged and taking to the streets right now, and it's not about Democrats or Republicans. It's about fairness. It's about, you know, economic justice, fair taxation, corporate money out of politics, ending corporate personhood. These are, you know, key points, the key points that really have nothing to do with Republicans and Democrats, because Democrats are in bed with these same corporations and the same crony capitalism that continues to this day and needs to end.
That's what part of what the film was about, and incidentally, it stars Jeremy Irons and Demi Moore. That's what the signs at Occupy Wall Street say. They say, make the banks pay, and which brings me to one of the emails that we have here. This is from Audrey Matt, or Mate, I'm not sure which, at Earthlink, and she says, as far as I can tell, banks don't really create wealth. They just move money around and charge their depositors for the privilege of depositing their money. That's the kind of sentiment that I see on the signs that occupy Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that's exactly it, and I guess I should throw in into my little rant there. I think the other thing that people are absolutely furious about is the fact that we've had a corporate takeover of our airwaves. And that had to do, as you guys, I'm sure, well know, with the, dissolution of the Fairness Doctrine under Reagan and then the Telecommunications Act under Bill Clinton, which allows these phony arguments to move forward as if they are real, as if there are WMD in Iraq, for example, when everybody knew that there wasn't, as if the Occupy folks are calling for an end to Apple and Microsoft. I mean, these are absurd lines of reasoning, absurd arguments, you know, and yet they are put forward as if they are real, and that's where the discussion happens instead of the discussion happening about what, you know, the real complaints are, what really has folks so outraged that they're willing to, you know, go out and camp out for weeks and months on end in the freezing cold trying to make their points.
Well, I have an email on that from dandyrandy32@yahoo.com, and he says, capitalism is done. If it isn't regulated, it destroys its customers. If it's profitable, it uses its profits to keep itself unregulated. I'm not a Tea Party or an occupier. I'm just scared for America.
Well, that's not about capitalism, to be frank. That is about crony capitalism. That's about what our system has become, now under this the current regime. And again, I'll put the Republicans and Democrats in there because those are the guys who have gotten rid of the regulators. Those are the guys who have allowed the corporate money into politics and, you know, have allowed corporations to take over our democracy. So, I don't blame capitalism per se. You know, it's like saying, in a football game, if you take away the referees, if you take away all the rules and you just say, you know, whoever gets the ball over the other guy's line wins, you know, maybe you're going to have an exciting game, but it's not going to be very fair, and ultimately it's not going to be very interesting. You know, whoever has the biggest guys are going to be the winners of every single game, and that is precisely what has happened to our economy.
And that's actually what's happening in the NBA right now, too. It looks like there isn't going to be an NBA season because everybody's trying to get every dime they can. Now, back to the oil companies, and Chuck asked the question, so I am going to answer it, is that there are cash checks that are sent to oil companies, but they're a small part of it. What I think the objection there is to subsidies that are in the form of free or discounted access to government services and infrastructure that the rest of us have to pay for. And examples of that are free federal water, hundreds of billions of gallons of it every year that go to refineries in Northern California that they don't have to pay for. It comes out of federal water projects, but the farmers have to pay for it, the cities have to pay for it, but they get to not pay for it. And those are the kinds of ways in which subsidies are given to many corporations, but they're given in a way in which you can't trace them, so it allows conservatives to say, no, there's no subsidies being given, we're just letting them keep all the money they earn. They don't earn that money, they extort it, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Now, that's right, and fossil fuel companies also, remember, pollute for free.
Yes.
And the taxpayers pay to clean it up.
But I want to make clear,
these all costs. Yeah.
But I want to make clear, I'm not against oil companies. My dad was in the oil industry. I know the oil industry very well. I was part of the regulatory scheme. I think what they do is actually a miracle to be able to lift petroleums out of 15,000 feet under a mile's worth of ocean and send it to a refinery and get it into my gas tank safely for $4 a gallon is an absolute miracle, and I have huge respect for them. I just wish that they would do it honestly, okay?
That's right, and pay their fair
Patrick,
share.
Patrick, can I just chime in here at this point?
Yeah,
First of all, I think that the oil companies, I mean, if a community like or communities in Northern California don't want oil to be drilled, then they shouldn't invite the oil companies in, and it takes apparently a lot of water to get oil out of the ground. I don't know the details on that, but the issue, I want to just address the question of the Fairness Doctrine, since that's the name of our program, and since I came up with that name. The reason that I call the show the Fairness Doctrine is because my intent was that we could have a left-right program, a program of different views and different guests, without government censorship, which is what the Fairness Doctrine was, and which is certainly how it was used by Richard Nixon when he went after his enemies. Going back to the issue of the bundling of mortgages. The problem is that the banks, the
when did Nixon
the
use
banks,
the fairness doctrine against his enemies?
In 1972, his enemies, yes, that's a matter of history. His enemies list included media people, and there was a one of the Nixon tapes says, use the fairness doctrine to F over, and then he mentioned a couple of people in the media who he didn't like. That's when.
Yeah, when did he do
but
that?
The
I'm
issue,
familiar with his enemies list.
1971, 72, when he was making those tapes. And
when did he use the fairness doctrine?
I'll repeat myself
enemies.
The third time. 1971, 1972, Nixon attempted to use the fairness doctrine to go after Dick Cavett in particular and several other people in the media that he didn't like.
But he didn't use
getting
it, right?
Back, yes, he did use it. He tried. Well, I think that he sent his attorney general to investigate them and to try to do it under the guise that there had to be given equal time for people who didn't agree with him or did agree with him. And that's what happens when the government gets in the business. Excuse me, but that's what happens when the government gets in the business of deciding the means of communication. And, you know, you may think that these are all phony arguments, but I would prefer them to government involvement, which I find chilling. But on the issue of the
public airwaves. Government is already involved.
Not in terms of speech. I haven't been contacted by a government agent yet to tell me what I can and can't say. Other than community standards, I mean, I can't use the F word. Thank you, and I hope to keep it that way. That's why I called the show.
Nobody was under the fairness doctrine either.
The fairness doctrine required that a radio station give equal time to views. If one particular view was expressed and somebody called in and said, I want to have an equal half hour to express my view, the radio station would have to give them that time. And the the government could fine a station if they were found not in compliance with those regulations. And
the government can still do that. And the fact is,
fine a radio station if they express an opinion that people don't that the government doesn't like. I don't think so.
Sure, ask Janet Jackson.
Well, first of all, that's community standards. We all agree you can't expose yourself on television. I'm talking about speech. But the issue of bundled mortgages, I think that the bankers, the CEOs and all of them and people at Fannie and Freddie, the problem is they didn't actually break the law. They were passing on mortgages and they were passing on bundled derivatives that they did know. You're right. They did know that they were bad because they were filled with bad mortgages that the government had coerced Fannie and Freddie to give.
And they were committing fraud by telling their customers.
You're right. But the thing is that
they were committing fraud by telling their customers they were good even while they were betting against them.
I agree with you. But the problem is that if the government hadn't gotten involved in trying to force banks to give those mortgages in the first place, sure, there would have been greedy banks like there's always been, but there wouldn't have been this national massive default that occurred. It's an example of what happens when the government inveigles itself into the economy. You know, and by the way, Lehman Brothers was allowed to go bankrupt, and rightfully. That's what should have happened.
You're
with
talking
the other
about
ones.
The Community Reinvestment Act of 1978. Well, under the
I'm talking about the strengthening of the Community Reinvestment Act in 1992, when banks and I've interviewed bankers both on and off the air on this.
Yeah.
Were told that they had to lower the standards of issuing mortgages. Now, what happened in that case, because it created a perverse incentive to give out mortgages, was that greedy bankers got involved and everybody started to get bigger mortgages, much more than they could afford. But
you realize the Community Reinvestment Act specifically no bank was ever required to give a mortgage out to someone who couldn't afford it. If they did that, the banks did so on their own. They shouldn't have done so. And, you know, rather than saying that they are the victims here, they are the ones who should have taken personal responsibility. You say you're a conservative.
Well,
personal responsibility. They were not forced to give out loans that people could not pay for. They did that on their own accord, then they lied about them, and then they told other people that these were great mortgages, they should buy them, even while the banks themselves were betting on those mortgages to fail. That is fraud, Chuck. Why, you know,
look, you're
why
right
are you
about everything except
defend
the
this
fact
behavior?
That the banks were told to, for example, consider unemployment as income, to not look at people's credit ratings. And this wasn't told to them in the sense that if they didn't do it, they could be, you know, illegal. It was told by the various bank regulatory agencies that if they didn't do it, then they would not be able to expand, they wouldn't be able to do various things. And there was pressure on the street as well by people who were saying you have to give out more mortgages. And the pressure was applied both by the government
otherwise. The pressure was applied. The pressure was applied by Wall Street, not by the government. The government didn't say you must give loans to people who can't pay them. Again,
yes,
I don't
did.
Know why.
And Wall Street certainly – yes, it did. And the Wall Street certainly jumped into the action because once that started happening, everybody started getting mortgages that they couldn't afford. I mean, the whole –
Can I get
the whole,
a word on the topic that
sure,
you were
Patrick.
Supposedly talking about, right? We were talking about Occupy Wall Street, and one of the claims made against Occupy Wall Street is they don't have an agenda of demands, and I would say, and I'd like to hear what our guest has to say, that that they've already been successful in that they've shifted the national conversation away from how do we take things away from teachers and fire people in cities and poor. And shone the spotlight back on the people who actually caused the financial problem, and that's the banks, the Wall Street investment banks, et cetera. Would you go along with that? They've already had a success just by changing the national conversation?
Well, yeah, they absolutely have. I mean, all we were talking about prior to Occupy Wall Street was, you know, how are we going to cut government spending? And I have yet to figure out how cutting government spending actually increases any jobs. In fact, cutting government spending has cost us tens and thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs over, you know, just the past year alone. The private sector has been adding jobs pretty much every single month since Barack Obama came to office. And by the way, you know, I didn't vote for Barack Obama, so I'm not, you know, trying to, and I've got plenty of criticism for Barack Obama. But the private sector has been adding public, has been adding private jobs. Where we've been losing jobs is in the public sector. So this pretend, again, another pretend fraudulent storyline that government spending is somehow costing jobs is absolutely absurd, and yet that is what the corporate mainstream media had been covering for months and months prior to Occupy Wall Street, as once again and as usual, Republicans were dominating the debate, dominating the airwaves, dominating our public airwaves. I mean, you need to look no further than yesterday's Sunday news shows. Look who the guests were. Try to find a Democrat on any of them. And, you know, we're reminded again why, A, we need a fairness doctrine, why, B, we need to do away with the Telecommunications Act, and why, C, the Occupy folks have already been successful in part, but need to keep at it because we've got 30 years of damage, at least 30 years of damage that has been done to this country that now needs to begin to unwind. And so, no, they're not going to have demands overnight. And while they keep the oligarchs and plutocracy sweating in the meantime, I'm just delighted about it, to be frank.
Just on a little factual note, you're right. The Institute for Work and Employment Research at MIT reports that the federal government shed 14,000 jobs since 2008. And state and local governments have shed 464,000 jobs since 2008. So government
not enough.
The private sector has expanded, and actually the job situation has gotten a little better here. So just on facts, the government jobs have shrunk. Well, that being the case, what would you recommend that the Occupy Wall Street spokespeople should be saying now? Should they be coming up with demands or just keep doing what they're doing?
Well, you know, one of the things that they're doing is coming up with demands, and they're working through a consensus process throughout all of the occupies around the nation, and then they're hoping to get consensus among the various occupy groups across the nation. So it's a long process, and as I say, they've got 30 years of damage to sort of undo here. So there are a lot of demands. You know, we need to this notion that corporations are people is just absolutely absurd. Recently at bradblog.com, I spelled out one thing that I think is critically important for our nation, and if I could just read it, it's one sentence here. Every U.S. citizen 18 years of age or older who wishes to vote gets to vote, period, and those votes on hand-marked paper ballots will be counted publicly by hand on election night at the precinct in front of all observers and video cameras. I think that's absolutely crucial to our democracy, to our right to self-governance, to know that our elections are carried out transparently and accurately. And, you know, even if you get the corporate money out of politics and out of our elections, if the people can't know that those folks who won those elections are the ones who actually received the most votes, and if people can't vote when they want to vote legally, then we're not going to get very far.
That every vote, that every person who is, you know, a legitimate citizen who wants to register to vote, if they want to vote, they should vote. And I'm very much against voter fraud, so I entirely agree with you there.
But voter fraud is not a problem. Voter fraud is not a problem. The problem is voter suppression right now and election fraud by insiders. But, you know, we've got government.
Well, I agree, I agree with you in that people who are registered voters, who are citizens, they should be able to vote without anyone encumbering them from doing so if they can identify themselves as citizens. So we can avoid voter fraud. But, you know, look, you're quite right that the Tea Party does support big government and lots of government employees. It's not that I'm anti-government, but I think that the government, and this is, by the way, being said by liberal governors as well, including Deval Patrick of Massachusetts, that it has to trim its sails, that it's involved in activities that we don't necessarily want or need, and in some cases we shouldn't have, such as surveillance activities. And I think that we could, you know, good government is reducing government and making sure the government goes back to its original mission, not allowing big government to exist. So, but you do accurately point out that the Tea Party is very much in favor of maintaining and furthering this big public sector on all levels. Again, it's not a matter of being against it, but it's a matter of making sure that it's properly staffed and properly functioning.
Well, they seem to be in favor of, you know, putting all of these wars on the credit card. They seem to be in favor of big government intrusion into the rights of, you know, Americans to marry who they want and so forth. And so to pretend that the Tea Party is against big government, thank you for not doing so, because the Tea Party likes to pretend they're against big government.
They're against
and
big government.
I'm talking about the fake Tea Party, the corporate Republican Tea Party.
Fake or real. They're against big government.
And on that note, gentlemen, we are just about out of time. Brad, where can our listeners get a hold of you?
You can find me anytime at bradblog.com. I also write for all kinds of places, Salon, Mother Jones, Computer World, and so on and so forth. So you can find me at a bunch of places, but I'm always at bradblog.com or on the Twitters at TheBradBlog.
Well,
Brad, thanks for joining us. Brad Friedman. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with commentary. You're listening to The Fairness Doctrine, Left, Right, and Uncensored. Please stay tuned.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
CyberStationUSA.com.